No, we were watching it the other day. You know, Oprah's on there. She's interviewing some clam, you know. And she's giving her this big, ridiculous intro. Like, she's done this, she's done that, she's done this. And she does the most difficult job on the planet. She's the mother. And continues on immediately. I just look at my girlfriend like, yeah, like, really? Being a mother is the most difficult job on the planet? Oh, yeah, all those mothers who die every year from black lung, from inhaling all that coal dust. Dude, women are just constantly patting themselves on the back about how difficult their lives are, and no one corrects them because they want to f*** them. So there's just this tornado of, like, misinformation. I have the most difficult job on the planet. What would you rather be doing? Drilling to the center of the earth, shaking hands with the devil. Every time there's a rumble in the ground, you wait for the whole thing to collapse down on top of you so they can write that folk song about you, you know? Would you rather be up in the sunshine, running around with a couple of toddlers that you can send to bed anytime you want on some sort of trumped-up charges, right? Because you want to have a drink and watch The Price is Right, you know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. It's the most difficult job on the planet. Oh, yeah. I thought roofing in the middle of July is a redhead. I thought that that was difficult. But these mothers are bending over at the waist, putting DVDs into DVD players. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it. Dude, any job that you can do in your pajamas is not a difficult job. All right? Give a break. Just Christ, you're 35 years old playing hide and go seek. You're living the dream. You're living the dream. No time card, no taxes, you're off the grid. Making popsicle stick houses. I mean, it's the most difficult job on the planet. Oprah's not even a mother. How the would she know? Unbelievable.
Congratulations. You got a lot of cool stuff. Sold out at Carnegie Hall?
Yeah.
Dude, congratulations. That's awesome, buddy.
Yes, I was terrified when they booked that gig that only 14 people were going to show up. And then it would be acoustically perfect, me bombing in front of 14 people. Yeah. So thank God.
And then
God,
also,
yeah.
You're getting honored at the Boston Comedy Festival.
Yes, I am.
Comedian of the Year. Dude,
yeah,
this is you.
I mean, I think technically I'm the guy who actually agreed to go there and accept the award.
Right. I know. Thanks for coming on our Halloween show. I appreciate you dressing up. Thank you so much. Are you with your girlfriend living in LA?
Yes, I am. I'm technically married, but I'm married how, like, I want to be married.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't sign that behind the music contract where, you know, everything works out until it doesn't work out. Yeah. No, you see, Sugar Shane Mosley, one of the greatest boxers of all time, he's losing his championship belt in a divorce. Losing, yeah, it's like you're trying to break a man. Why does she want those? Right?
Trying to break a man.
They go with their shoes. When you get a divorce, all of a sudden it costs like 50 grand a month to give a kid Fruit Loops. Right? Guys, I'm telling you, there is an epidemic of gold digging whores in this country, and it is just not being addressed on any level.
What are you talking
any
about?
Level. What do you mean, what am I talking about? Every guy out there is just getting, nobody's safe. Football players, actors, politicians.
Nobody.
And they never
sick.
Get called whores. Arnold Schwarzenegger's maid is still called the maid in the story. She knew his wife on a first name basis, hooked up with this dude in their bed, and is still called the maid. Why did she bang him? Why?
Jeez, yeah.
Because of that 1987 flat top he's still rocking, right? You don't think it's because of that kindergarten cop money he's got laying around the room? I'm not condoning what the man did. But, yeah. You know, there just needs to be, guys need to be educated. There's nothing out there to help a guy handle becoming rich and famous for that platoon of whores that's going to come over the hill. Like Braveheart, faces painted, oh skirt on, just
platoon
running down
of
the
whores.
Hill. Yes, there's nothing out there. No, it's like guys never learn how to keep themselves in check. Society does it for you.
Yeah.
Just women aren't going to bang you because you drive the forklift at Home Depot, right? Despite the fact that you want to bang all of them, they're not going to do it. So you didn't keep yourself in check. The forklift job did, right? Then all of a sudden you hit the lottery, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can just give in to all of that. Like, I'm so sick of all these trolls coming on TV judging these great men. These great men. All these guys. Anytime one of these guys gets caught for screwing around, these guys come waddling out of their cubicles with their jowls. They're absolutely reprehensible behavior. Like, they have any idea what it's like to be tempted at that level. You know?
Yeah.
As you walk over to your Ford Focus, are you really beating these women off of you? All those people who judge Tiger Woods. How many people here golf? When was the last time you walked off the 18th hole and there was a busload of Scandinavian women waiting to hump your brains out? And you're like, sorry, ladies. You know? Like I said.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
You guys, Bill Burr is his name.
In 2013, I decided to meet my enemies. I was a 27-year-old award-winning documentary filmmaker and a proud feminist, and I was determined to expose the dark underbelly of the men's rights movement. At that point, all I knew of the men's rights movement was from what I read online, that it's a misogynistic hate group actively working against women's equality. While the vast majority of my previous work was about women's issues, I directed documentaries about reproductive rights, single motherhood, and the need for more girls to get into STEM education. So when I learned that no one had ever documented the men's rights movement in a film before, I saw it as an opportunity to continue fighting for women's equality by exposing those preventing it. So for 1 year, I traveled North America, meeting the leaders and followers of the men's rights movement. I spent anywhere from 2 hours up to 8 hours interviewing each individual men's rights activist, also known as MRA. And I filmed 44 people total. And there's an important rule in documentary filmmaking. As an interviewer, you do not interrupt. So I'm asking questions, and I'm getting their full life story. And in the moment, I didn't realize it. But now, looking back, I can see that while I was conducting my interviews, I wasn't actually listening. I was hearing them speak, and I knew the cameras were recording. But in those moments of sitting across from my enemy, I wasn't listening. What was I doing? I was anticipating. I was waiting to hear a sentence, or even just a couple of words in succession that proved what I wanted to believe, that I had found the misogynist, the ground zero of the war on women. A couple of times I thought I had it. There was one men's rights activist that said to me, "Just walk outside and look around. Everything you see was built by a man." Ooh, his statement felt anti-women. I felt my jaw clench, but I sat quietly, as a documentarian should, while removing all the space between my upper and lower molars. After my year of filming, I was reviewing the 100 hours of footage I had gathered, replaying and transcribing it. Which, believe me when I say, no one will ever listen to you more than someone who transcribes your words. You should write that down. So So I was typing out every word meticulously, and through that process, I began to realize that my initial knee-jerk reactions to certain statements weren't really warranted, and my feeling offended didn't hold up to intense scrutiny. Was that statement about men having built the skyscrapers and the bridges anti-women? I thought, well, what would be the gender reverse scenario? Maybe a feminist saying, just look around. Everyone you see was birthed by a woman. Wow, that's a powerful statement. And it's true. Is it anti-male? I don't think so. I think it's acknowledging our unique and valued contributions to our society. Well, luckily, while I was making the Red Pill movie, I kept a video diary, which ended up tracking my evolving views. And in looking back on the 37 diaries I recorded that year, there was a common theme. I would often hear an innocent and valid point that a men's rights activist would make, but in my head, I would add on to their statement a sexist or anti-woman spin, assuming that's what they wanted to say but didn't. So here are two examples of how that would go. A men's rights activist, an MRA, would say to me, there are over 2,000 domestic violence shelters for women in the United States, but only one for men. Yet multiple reputable studies show that men are just as likely to be abused. I would hear them say, we don't need 2,000 shelters for women. They're all lying about being abused. It's all a scam. But in looking back on all the footage I'd gathered of men's rights activists talking about shelters, and all the blogs they've written, and the video live streams they posted on YouTube, they're not trying to defund women's shelters, not at all. All they're saying is that men can be abused too, and they deserve care and compassion. Second example, a men's rights activist would say to me, where is justice for the man who was falsely accused of raping a woman? And because of this accusation, he loses his college scholarship and is branded with the inescapable title of rapist. I would hear them say, a woman being raped isn't a big deal. It's as if I didn't hear the word falsely accused of rape. All I heard was he was accused of rape. Of course, rape is a big deal, and all the men's rights activists I met agreed it is a horrible thing to have happened to anyone. I eventually realized what they're saying is they're trying to add to the gender equality discussion, who is standing up for the good-hearted, honorable man that loses his scholarship, his job, or worse yet, his children, because he's accused of something he absolutely did not do. Well, I couldn't keep denying the points they were making. There are real issues. But in my effort to avoid agreeing with my enemy completely, I changed from putting words in their mouth to acknowledging the issue, but insisting they are women's issues. So here are two examples of how that would go. A men's rights activist would say to me, men are far more likely to lose their child in a custody battle. And I would counter, well, because women are unfairly expected to be the caretaker, it's discrimination against women that women get custody more often. Yeah. I'm not proud of that. Second example, an MRA would say to me, men are roughly 78% of all suicides throughout the world. And I would counter with, but women attempt suicide more often. So ha. Ha. It's not a contest, but I kept making it into one. Why couldn't I simply learn about men's issues and have compassion for male victims without jumping at the opportunity to insist that women are the real victims? Well, after years of researching and fact-checking what the men's rights activists were telling me. There is no denying that there are many human rights issues that uniquely or disproportionately affect men. Paternity fraud uniquely affects men. The United States Selective Service, in the case of a draft, still uniquely affects men. Workplace deaths, disproportionately men. War deaths, overwhelmingly men. Suicide, overwhelmingly men. Sentencing disparity, life expectancy, child custody, child support, false rape allegations, criminal court bias, misandry, failure to launch, boys falling behind in education, homelessness, veterans issues, infant male genital mutilation, lack of parental choice once a child is conceived, lack of resources for male victims of domestic violence. So many issues that are heartbreaking if you are the victim or you love someone who is the victim of any one of these issues. These are men's issues, and most people can't name one because they think, well, men have all the rights. They have all the power and privilege. But these issues deserve to be acknowledged. They deserve care, attention, and motivation for solutions. Before making the Red Pill movie, I was a feminist of about 10 years, and I thought I was well-versed on gender equality issues. But it wasn't until I met men's rights activists that I finally started to consider the other side of the gender equality equation. It doesn't mean I agreed with all that they said, but I saw the immense value in listening to them and trying to see the world through their eyes. I thought if I could get my audience to also listen to them, it could serve as a rung on the ladder, bringing us all up to a higher consciousness about gender equality. So in October 2016, the film was released in theaters, and articles and critic reviews started to roll in. And that's when I experienced how engaged the media is in groupthink around gender politics. And I learned a difficult lesson. When you start to humanize your enemy, you, in turn, may be dehumanized by your community. And that's what happened to me. Rather than debating the merit of the issues addressed in the film, I became the target of a smear campaign. And people who had never seen the movie protested outside the theater doors, chanting that it was harmful to women. It certainly is not. But I understand their mindset. If I never made this movie and I heard that there was a documentary screening about men's rights activists that didn't show them as monsters, I too would have protested the screenings or at least signed the petitions to ban the film because I was told that they were my enemy. I was told that men's rights activists were against women's equality. But all the men's rights activists I met support women's rights and are simply asking the question, why doesn't our society care about men's rights? Well, the greatest challenge I faced through this whole process, it wasn't the protests against my film, and it wasn't how I was treated by the mainstream media, even though it got pretty disgusting at times. The greatest challenge I faced was peeling back the layers of my own bias. It turns out I did meet my enemy while filming. It was my ego saying that I was right and they were subhuman. It's no secret now that I no longer call myself a feminist, but I must clarify, I am not anti-feminist, and I am not a men's rights activist. I still support women's rights, and I now care about men's rights as well. However, I believe if we want to honestly discuss gender equality, we need to invite all voices to the table. Yet this is not what is happening. Men's groups are continually vilified, falsely referred to as hate groups, and their voices are systematically silenced. Do I think either movement has all the answers? No. Men's rights activists are not without flaws, and neither are feminists. But if one group is being silenced, that's a problem for all of us. If I could give advice to anyone in our society at large, we have to stop expecting to be offended, and we have to start truly, openly, and sincerely listening. That will lead to a greater understanding of ourselves and others, having compassion for one another, working together towards solutions, because we all are in this together. And once we do that, we can finally heal from the inside out. But it has to start with listening. Thank you for listening.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is an historic moment. Never before has there been a gathering of this magnitude to support men's and boys' issues. We have got serious problems. I have been working in this area, advocating for the rights of and here we go.
What you'll hear is that we hate women, that it's a backlash against women's rights. You'll hear that we're regressives that want women back in the kitchen and making sandwiches and barefoot and pregnant.
Misogynist rantings would be at home in the far-reaching internet subculture widely described as the men's rights movement, a toxic distillation of the worst aspects of American sexism. It's a universe of message boards like Reddit's The Red Pill, where men get together to express their hatred towards women.
You're just bitter, you're a loser, you're a whiner, you're ugly, you're undesirable, you're lazy, you're scary, you must be a racist, you must be a misogynist.
It's a gathering of women haters.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has classified that group and men's rights groups as hate groups.
And this is the way people who don't want men to talk about issues try to shut us up.
Because we've been focusing our binoculars on the issue of discrimination against women.
Most of the discrimination is faced by men. The fact of the matter is men are suffering.
Their wife wants to abort the child and they don't. What do you tell them?
I can't tell you at this point how many guys I've talked to who are like, yeah, you know, she stabbed me and they put me in jail.
I'll never forget this. He said, if she starts hitting you again, you better get out of there fast, because if she just breaks a fingernail trying to hit you, we'll arrest you.
Just say that he either raped you, sexually abused you, and we'll get you the house, we'll get the kids, and it's done quick.
All she needs to do is make the accusation, and that's on your record.
DNA should mean do not ask, because it's now illegal to even get a test, and if you get a test without the mother's permission, you will be criminally prosecuted.
It was a 15-year-old boy, it was a 35-year-old woman, and she was able to collect child support from this boy that she raped.
It is.
False accusations, men's health issues, homelessness, the rates and statistics that we don't hear about.
93% of workplace fatalities are men. 4 of 5 suicides are men.
Men are conscious that our society doesn't want to hear their pain.
We value female life more than we value male life.
Because the U.S. government does not want to send you to die. They would rather send me to die.
All these forms of discrimination are happening in a society that doesn't even allow us to talk about them. We've talked about women's issues for 50 years openly in this culture.
I think I agree with everything you said, but there's still some kind of unsettling doubt, and I don't know where that's coming from. And then sometimes I think the MRAs are just duping me and giving such a strong pitch about what they believe in to convince me of something that's actually just some out there theory that men are discriminated against and women are have the advantage. So I realized, okay, I need to bring some feminists right into the mix to make sure that we have that side.
Good.
So it's kind of my journey learning about the men's movement because I've been a feminist my entire life.
The more I've gotten to know about the men's rights movement, the more confused I am about everything.
Feminist majority.
Yes, women are still oppressed. Culturally, politically, socially, economically.
They call themselves MRAs, men's rights advocates.
I'm not sure what the goal is for MRAs because it sounds like they feel out of power and they feel like their voice isn't being heard. And certainly if anybody can understand that, it's feminists.
White men are starting to feel misplaced because women are sharing space. I am a man and I need feminism.
Is the men's rights movement really the gender version of the white nationalist movement?
I'm not against men having their rights, but you know, in the history of everything, men have always had rights. Is it possible that the things that they're railing against are actually patriarchal things?
We live in more of a patriarchy now than we ever did.
When it comes to equality under the law, when it comes to representation in the political halls of power, the business halls of power, men are advantaged over women, no question. No one can debate that.
As I see it, the only real imbalance is in the belief system.
All I had to do, a simple choice, I could just say, yes, you're right. Men are the enemy. No problem. But I couldn't. I absolutely couldn't.
I think that the feminist movement is based on the idea that women have been victims, but not that men are the perpetrators.
Teach men not to write. Only men can stop write. Men commit domestic violence. We need to stop violence against women instead of just stopping violence. That is feminist training.
We all want to make a difference and ensure that this is a better world for the future women.
That's what we are here for, to say no more to violence in any forms, especially against women and girls.
We have a big hole in the area of compassion for boys and men.
Instead of debating us, they try to shut anything we do down.
We can't solve any of these problems if we're not allowed to even stand up and say they exist.
We just don't seem to respect each other for who we are. Something sinister, there's some sinister aspect of our culture, something sick, something malignant, something horrifically destructive.
I think it's inherently antagonistic, so the reason security guards are here, I think that's entirely warranted.
Got all these death threats and rape threats, and I was terrified.
We are all organizing as a single voice, a loud voice.
It's time for us to quit apologizing for being for men's rights. It's time for us to quit apologizing for being men.
It's commonplace and it's everywhere, and the more you start to become conscious of it, the more you realize that it's there.
I don't lack sympathy for any of this.
The red pill is about looking at these issues in an honest way, even when it's uncomfortable. Are you going to put a disclaimer that no feminists were harmed in the making of this movie?
And then you could put in parentheses into that, we really don't care whether men were harmed.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Being a normal boy is a serious liability in today's classroom. Boys tend to be disorganized and restless. Some have even been known to be noisy and hard to manage. Sound like any boy you know? But increasingly, our schools have little patience for what only a couple of decades ago would have been described as boyishness. As psychologist Michael Thompson has aptly observed, girls' behavior is the gold standard in schools. Boys are treated like defective girls. Now, as a result, these defective girls are not faring well academically. Compared with girls, boys earn lower grades, they win fewer honors, they're far less likely to go to college. Boys are languishing academically while girls are prospering. In an ever more knowledge-based economy, this is not a recipe for a successful society. We need to start thinking about how we can make our grade school classrooms more boy-friendly. Well, here are four reforms that would make a very good start. One, turn boys into readers. In all age groups, across all ethnic lines, boys score lower than girls on national reading tests. Good reading skills, need I say, are critical to academic and workplace success. A major study in the UK discovered, not surprisingly, that girls prefer fiction, magazines, and poetry, while boys prefer comics and nonfiction. Boys whose eyes glaze over if forced to read Little House on the Prairie may be riveted by the Guinness Book of Records.
Cool.
Boys will read if given materials that interest them. If you're looking for suggestions for books that have proved irresistible to boys, go to guysread.com. Two, inspire the male imagination. Celebrated writing instructor Ralph Fletcher contends that too many teachers take what is called the confessional poet as the classroom ideal. Personal narratives full of emotions and self-disclosure, these are stories girls commonly write, and these are prized, whereas action stories describing, say, a skateboard competition or a monster devouring a city, these are not. I recently read about a third grader in Southern California named Justin, who loved science fiction, pirates, and battles. Well, an alarmed teacher summoned his parents to school to discuss the picture the 8-year-old had drawn of a sword fight, which included several decapitated heads. The teacher expressed grave concern about Justin's values. The boy's father was astonished, not by his son's drawing, which to him was typical boy stuff, but by the teacher's overwrought and female-centered reaction. If boys are constantly subject to disapproval for their interests and enthusiasms, they're likely to become disengaged and lag further behind. Our schools need to work with, not against, the kinetic imaginations of boys. Three, zero out, zero tolerance. Boys are nearly 5 times as likely to be expelled from preschool as girls. And in grades K through 12, boys account for nearly 70% of suspensions. Now, this is often for minor acts of insubordination and sometimes for entirely innocent behavior. Hardly a week goes by without a news story about a young boy running afoul of a school's zero tolerance policy. Josh Welsh, age 7, was recently sent home from his Maryland school for nibbling off the corners of a strawberry Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun. Josh, like many other boys punished for violating zero tolerance policies, was guilty of nothing more than being a typical 7-year-old boy. Four, bring back recess. Believe it or not, recess may soon be a thing of the past. According to research summarized by Science Daily, since the 1970s, school children have lost close to 50% of their unstructured outdoor playtime. And much-loved games have vanished from schoolyards. In schools throughout the country, games like dodgeball, Red Rover, even tag have all but disappeared, too damaging to self-esteem or too violent being the usual excuse. One popular classroom guide suggests tug of war be replaced with tug of peace. Boys need to work off their energy. They need to be free to play games they enjoy, and keeping them cooped up and inside all day will not help them learn. As our schools become more feeling-centered, more competition-free, more sedentary, they move further away from the needs of boys. We need to reverse the boy-averse trends. Male underachievement is everyone's concern. These are our sons. These are the young men with whom our daughters will build a future. If boys are in trouble, so are we all. I'm Christina Hoff Summers at the American Enterprise Institute for Prager University.
Okay, another story I've been holding here in abeyance for most of the, well, I got back on Wednesday, a story that ran on Fox News back on November 24th, which was shortly after Thanksgiving. It's by a woman, and her name is Suzanne Vinker. So she works at FoxNews.com. I don't think she's on the air anywhere. And her piece is called The War on Men. I give you a couple pull quotes from this story. She's writing this. I've actually stumbled upon a subculture of men who've told me in no uncertain terms that they are never getting married. And when I ask them why, the answer is always the same. Women aren't women anymore. Here's another pull quote. Men want to love women, not compete with them. They want to provide for and protect their families. It's in their DNA. But modern women will not let them. Modern women will not give them any credit for that. The way men used to feel like men is not permitted anymore. Being a provider, taking care of, that you don't get any credit for that anymore with today's women. That's her point, based on her conversation with other women. The battle of the sexes is alive and well, is the way this piece begins. According to the Pew Research Center, the share of women ages 18 to 34 say that having a successful marriage is one of the most important things in their lives, and it rose 9 points from 97. It's up 28%, 37%. For men, the opposite occurred. The share voicing this opinion dropped from 35% to 29%. People that want to get married. Believe it or not, modern women want to get married. The trouble is that men don't. The so-called dearth of good men, meaning marriageable men, has been a hot subject in the media as of late. Much of the coverage has been in response to the fact that for the first time in history, women have become the majority of the U.S. workforce. They're also getting most of the college degrees. The problem? This new phenomenon has changed the dance between men and women. By the way, she's right about that. Fewer and fewer men are going to college. Why is that? They're all feminized? They've been chickified? Is that what you're saying? The feminists have taken over the curriculum. Well, there is something to this in the sense that radical feminism, folks, here's the thing that it's a hard, cold reality to me. And I've been doing this 25 years, and I think back to previous years, in fact, eras of this program. And we did our feminist updates. And what were the feminist updates? We laughed at what was being done in universities. We laughed at some of the radical cockeyed ideas that radical feminists and feminazis are, that while we were laughing, that stuff was becoming reality. Well, I'll speak for myself. I was laughing. And I was of the opinion that no rational majority of people is ever going to subscribe to this. Radical feminism. For example, portraying men as natural predators. All sex is rape. Remember Catherine McKinnon? All sex is rape, even the sex in marriage. And she was a professor of something at the University of Michigan. And she was teaching this stuff. I remember doing Feminazi updates about it, laughing. Yeah, okay, there's always going to be some small group of unhappy people to fall into. No, it's not a small group. It has become reality for a whole lot of women. That and a lot of other things. The man as a natural predator that had to be shielded. His children had to be protected from him. At the slightest raising of his voice, they call Child Protective Service. They come over to house. Maybe take the kids away if the husband was out of whack. And being out of whack didn't take much other than raising your voice. All these things. I mean, I can't remember, but some of them were just ridiculous. But they've become mainstreamed. Far, and it's not just with feminism, it's a lot of other liberalism, the same kind of environmentalism. The whole hoax of global warming, while all this is being built and while it's happening, we're pointing out the intellectual holes in the data. We're pointing out the faults in the so-called logic of the argument. In the meantime, it was taking hold with a whole bunch of young people, starting with Ted Turner's Captain Planet cartoon series on Saturday morning, to who knows what else was happening. Now, I've told you, shared with you many times, I read tech blogs because that's my hobby. Staying up to speed on tech stuff. And the tech blogs are written by a bunch of young guys, and women too in some cases, that are in their 20s and 30s. And you read these people, standard ordinary stuff every day, it's amazing what they really believe. They believe the stuff you and I were laughing about when they were 4 and 5 years old. They really believe, for example, that the kind of cars that we have driven has destroyed the climate. Not that we are destroying it. They really believe, even though it cannot be proven, they really believe that Hurricane Sandy was because of global warming. They really believe the sea levels are rising to flood levels. They watched Al Gore's movie, and instead of laughing at it and seeing all the crock in it, they bought it, hook, line, and sinker. And not only did they buy it, they are now arrogantly cocky about it, thinking they are the only ones who are right, and anybody who doesn't see it is a Neanderthal. It's really been fascinating in one regard, is disappointing in another, scary in another, but they bought and believe as fervently as anything you believe the stuff that we were laughing at, deservedly so. I mean, how many different people have said if we don't clean up the oceans in 10 years, we're going to Ted Danson? They believe it. Starting in 1986, if we don't fix this, we're going to global warming, we've only got 20 years. Well, that was 2006, and the world didn't end, and it wasn't getting even hotter in 2006. Doesn't matter. All somebody had to do is come along and say another 20 years, because, and this was the brilliance of these people's campaign to work on young people, impressionable young people. And how did the global warming movement really propel itself? First thing it did was make everybody feel guilty. You have destroyed the planet. You and the way you're living, your capitalist lifestyle, capitalism wasn't said, but your self-indulgent lifestyle, your lifestyle of desiring more stuff, your wanting to increase your standard of living, and all of that led to global warming. All of that excess wasn't fair. And we're sitting here thinking, this stuff hasn't worked in our lifetimes. It's not going to work now. It's sophistry, but it did work, because in addition to telling these young people, and by the way, women too, in addition to saying you are destroying the planet, they offered them absolution. Drive this car. Don't buy that. Live this way and you can save the planet. Well, that was a noble thing, be able to save the planet after you have been made to feel guilty for helping to destroy it. And, of course, what were the proscriptions for saving the planet? Nothing but big government liberalism. And they all bought into it. And now it's de rigueur. Or de rigueur, whatever. But it's fascinating to expose yourself to this stuff. Stuff that you know is a crock. Stuff that you know is nothing more than propaganda. See how easily it has been inculcated in these young skulls full of mush. No, I'm not surprised propaganda works, but this is massive. And so back to this piece, the same thing has happened with women's studies on campus, radical militant feminism. We were laughing at it because we all knew women who thought it was a crock, as well as we who thought it was a crock. But now these people all come out, these young tech bloggers, even some of the sports media, doesn't matter where you go, This young, hip, pop culture demographic, not only do they believe all the stuff we were laughing at, they have a moral superiority about their countenance. What they believe is morally superior to, say, what I believe. What they believe and what they live and how they live, morally superior. So they kind of look down their noses at people. They do not and will not consider opposing arguments because the people who make them have been discredited with character assassination and so forth throughout every little tentacle of education, be it K through 12 or college, undergrad, postgrad, you name it. Even today, I don't have one handy, but every day there's a story, but some wacko professor saying something utterly insane. And then you stop and realize, wait a minute, this guy is a professor, and there are hundreds of kids who've been through this guy's class over the years who believe this stuff. And that's the thing, the hardest thing for me was to accept that they did believe it and absorb it, rather than laugh at it. Now, there were people that laughed at it along with us. We'd heard from them, and the little kids in college call, but there were also those who bought it hook, line, and sinker. All of this radical liberalism, radical feminism, radical environmentalism, all the stuff that people think about conservatives, all the things that people have been told about Republicans, racist, sick. How in the world do you have yesterday that woman called here was talking about all the negative ads run against Romney. Or it was a guy, I think. I said, you know, we've really got a problem in this country. And I mean this. We have a real problem. I always put it this way. No, I'm not going to put it that way because that's old fogyism. Let's put this. When you've got a majority of people in this country who can be made to believe that Mitt Romney hates dogs, with a commercial of a dog in a cage on a roof of a station wagon with ostensibly the Romney family inside on a family vacation, then I would suggest we've got a problem. Take whatever other insult or mischaracterization or character assault on conservatives you can believe, and there is a moral superiority to the people who believe this stuff. It's not that they just believe it. It is that there is an arrogant condescension about them. They're close-minded. There's no other possible way to explain things that are happening other than what they believe. So here's this piece, The War on Men. And this woman at Fox writes, I've stumbled upon a subculture of men who've told me they're never getting married. Ask them why. The answer's always the same. Women aren't women anymore. Men want to love women, not compete with them. They want to provide for it, protect their families. It's in their DNA, but modern women will not let them. Modern women will not let a man take credit for any of that. A man, in order to get credit from a woman, has to do other stuff now. That's not in his DNA. That's the whole point of her piece. So a man has to figure, okay, because men throughout time have always been trying to figure out what they have to be to get where they want to go where women are concerned. I remember when I was young, the whole thing, where do you meet women? I'd go out and get women's magazines and turn to the section on where to meet men, which would tell me where I was supposed to be. and I would go there. And it was always a fun little dance and a fun little game. But the traditional way that men were rewarded by the women they loved, are they don't exist anymore. And a guy who wants to be appreciated and loved because of the things that are naturally in his DNA, it's rejected. And so this woman has stumbled across a bunch of... They're not only not going to college where women are, they're not trying to meet women, and they're not trying to marry them. And that's why you get ads run by Obama on Julia. She's single her whole life. And that's why it works. We laughed at the Julia ad. That ad worked. The war on women, this whole business of giving away contraception, we're laughing at it. It worked. I don't know on a majority, but it worked. There were actually enough women in this country who were made to believe that Mitt Romney was going to take their birth control pills away from them, not let them have them. And then after they got pregnant, he was going to make them have an abortion. They believe it. They've been told it. They've been educated this way. That's what conservative men aren't. And these guys, I'm not even messing with this. I'm not even going to do battle with this. Back when I lived in Kansas City in the 1970s, a book came out by Susan Brown Miller. It was a book about rape. And it made the case rape was not a sexual crime, it was a violent crime. Well, it became a huge fad with women. I knew guys who went out and bought the book. Whatever it took. They had a crush on a woman. If a woman believed in the book, go get the book. Give it to her, discuss it with her. Found out, no, this is not the way. It was dealing with a militant. I thought the guy was a predator because of what was in the book.